And now the quick pass down the middle, breaking in and the backhand stopped by Chris Mason. And Marlowe with a 2-on-1, a 3-on-1, and what a stop by Mason. Chichu right in front, and what a stop on Ekblom by Mason.
And goal! Number 3, Chris Mason!
That open gets me fired up every single time. Chris Mason joins us now. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 125-106.3, the game. Chris Mason brought to you by Coleman Tractor and Tennessee's largest Kubota dealer. See, Mace, it's always great to talk with you. And look, if you would have asked me about John Hines' job security maybe a month and a half ago, I would have said, get him out. Once they hired Barry Trotz, I would have said, oh, he's gone. Barry Trotz wants to bring in his guy. But since the trade deadline, I have to give John Hines so much credit for keeping this team alive and keeping this team in the fight. Looking at Barry Trotz's point of view, he has a difficult decision facing him on the future of this team with the roster and as far as the head coach is concerned. What do you think Barry Trotz is looking at, what his perspective is in terms of the future of the head coaching position and what John Hines has done in the last month, month and a half since the trade deadline?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I mean, when you have a team like the Preds did at the beginning of the year, when they have, you know, pretty much the same team as they did last season, and you have a bunch of guys underperform, I think it's just natural. Everybody wants to point the finger. Oh, it's the coach. Get him out of here. They need a new voice. And in my opinion, it was a lot of the guys, the higher paid players that weren't performing at the level that they should be performing or that they did last year. And you're talking about a team that had 9 guys, I think, on it that had career years. And, even if they weren't going to repeat and have career years, if they were close to that production or, you know, in the middle of, you know, their previous years and things like that, but it wasn't going that way. And I feel, the power play was the same thing. They executed the same power play and this and that. They had all the same personnel, kept the lines the same, and there just wasn't that production. So everybody wants to get rid of Hines. And I get that. That's sports. Sometimes that is the case. In this situation, I don't think it was. My opinion was the top guys weren't getting it done at the beginning of the year, and they weren't scoring goals. And when you're not scoring goals, it's the guys that score goals. That's what they get paid to do. So now, you know, you have a situation where this team has no business being in this race. Absolutely none. Half the team is the Milwaukee Admirals. And these young guys that we've been talking about, and, you know, we've been wanting to see the future of the organization, because at the deadline, that's the direction they went. And they have all these young guys, and I think Hines and the whole coaching staff have done a phenomenal job with this team, because when young players come up to the NHL, they have offensive skill and they can compete, you know, at that level with other players in the league. The hardest thing is getting the opportunities and getting the chances, and you get those chances by playing defense, and you have to buy into a certain way to play at this level. Because if you try to run and gun with teams in the Predators situation right now, look at their decor, look at their top 6 forwards have less than 500 games in the NHL combined. So it's crazy. So he has these guys like with complete buy-in. They're going out there, and yeah, they're going to make mistakes. They're young, but they're hungry, and they are working their butts off. And a lot of credit has to be given to Hines and the coaching staff. There's no question. So, and he's in, right from the beginning, he invited Barry Trotz in. Hey, come sit in all the meetings. Come be a part of this. I believe in what we're doing here. I believe in our staff, and I want you to see exactly what we're doing. So, I think if this was, a position to earn your job back or keep your job or whatever you want to call it, I think he's definitely done that.
Now, see, Mace, I think that might have been probably the best thing that John Hines could have done, considering what was going on, is to welcome Barry Trotz into those meeting rooms, sit with them. So if there's something that he may see that we need to do better, he can point it out and I can correct it and we can get this team going. So that may have been, quietly the best thing that John Hines could have done for his team and himself. And also, you said another thing, these guys coming up from Milwaukee. I think one of the reasons why it has worked, and tell me if you agree with this, is because, yes, they're coming up from Milwaukee, but these guys have played together. So now they get up, to the NHL, And it's not like they're not familiar with one another. They understand one another a little bit different than, say, you bring a guy up and then you trade for a guy that's coming from another team or another guy that's coming from another team. And now they got to try to figure this out in such a short amount of time. But some of these guys, you know, have been playing together. So do you think that's one of the reasons why this team has been able to, they're basically playing 500 hockey. I think they're 9-9 since March 4th, since the trade deadline, which I don't think I would have thought they would even be 500 considering what they were, what they did as far as guys that they traded away and guys that they brought up.
That's a great question, and I think you're bang on, because I remember getting called up as a young player, and you go up and, you know, you're alone and you're kind of meeting all the NHL guys. It's intimidating, and you take kind of a back seat. You know, you're just happy to be there kind of thing. But, you know, the situation right now with these guys, they've all played together, so they have a bunch of their teammates that they've had success in Milwaukee. They see their buddy that's playing in Nashville having success. They come up, you know, you have that instant belief, because as a young player, I was like, oh, can I play it? Then can I play at this level? Can I, you know, do the same things I was doing in the American League? And, you know, but also not only that, but the familiarity with the guys and the camaraderie and the fact that you've developed chemistry, you know, in the locker room and on the ice with these guys, it definitely helps a young player to come up with some of his teammates and guys that he knows. You know, just for your mind and just not the intimidation factor, but also seeing your teammates that you played with, that you've had success with, have success at the NHL, because then it tells me or a player getting called up, you're like, hey, you know, look at him. He's doing it up there. I can go up there and do the same thing. So I think you're seeing that, and it's probably, I think, exponentially, you know, maybe help these guys in their development, and the fact that they're all getting, they're not coming up and playing third and fourth line minutes. They're getting thrown right in the fire. They're top six. They're, you know, top four defensemen. They're getting all this ice time. They're on the penalty kill. You know, when if, you know, this whole lineup's healthy, these guys aren't getting a sniff like that. But now it's a completely different story. But I definitely think that has a lot to do with it.
Chris Mason is with us. And, Mace, we're reminiscing about 2008. Because depending on the website you look at today, you know, the Predators' chances today of making the playoffs are, you know, 8%, 4%, 9%, 11%. There's a lot of different ways to calculate it. But I remember in 2008, Barry Trotz, you guys were down 5 points with 7 games to go. And it really looked bleak, right? And you guys went on a great run late. And one of the things he clinged to was like, look, guys, I looked at this website. I think it's called Sports Club Stats, if I remember correctly, is the one. If it wasn't that, it was something similar to it. He said, I looked at it. If we just win our games, we have a good chance. That number is going to change. So don't worry about what's happening. If we just win our games, this thing could fall in line. And the important thing to take out of that is this team looks like they believe, right? It's like they're not too concerned with the odds. Just go out there and play your next game, see what happens. But do you remember that very much back in 2008, that run?
Well, I remember, and I've been on teams even the next year when I was in St. Louis. I think we actually knocked the Preds out of playoffs. But
yes, that's true.
Neither here nor there. But we were in a very similar situation. And, you know, when you're in that on that team, it's fun. I mean, you guys, just think of the first half of the season, all the, you know, the coverage that you guys were doing, all the questions and stuff you guys probably had to feel. We're talking about get rid of the coach, get rid of this guy. Poyle's got to go, all this stuff. And just think now when you watch this team, these guys are having fun. Nobody on the planet thinks they have a chance, but they do, and that's the beauty of it. You almost you use that as extra motivation, and you don't even really care, because it's just another one. You kind of laugh at it, and you just keep winning. You just keep going out there playing, and you can just tell by the body language of these guys. They don't care. They don't care who they play. They don't care if they're going into, you know, TD Gardens to play the best team in the National Hockey League. This team thinks they can beat anybody, and it's crazy. And it's not cocky or anything. It's just a young, confident group that's just going out there and they're working their butts off and they're having fun. And you can just see it on their body language when you know their interviews, the way that they play. And when you see something like that, you know, a 5% chance or this or that, or you kind of laugh it off and you just go out and play. And it's the old one game at a time. All right, who we play next? We got the Carolina Hurricanes, all right, they're trying to win the division. Let's just go play them. Let's just give them our best and see what happens. And they're using all that stuff. They'll take all that stuff, the percentages. They just go out there. They just go play with their heart and see what happens. And it's been fun to watch. You know, they're going to make mistakes. It's a young team. But I'll tell you, since this group's been together, there hasn't been one game where whether they lost or that even that game when they got blown out by the Rangers that you walk away from that game saying that they didn't work as hard as they can. So all the odds are still going to be really tough. You probably have to win all of your games, and you definitely have to beat Winnipeg and Calgary. But I'll tell you what, this group thinks they can do it. So it's Carolina up next. Tomorrow's going to be tough.
Yep, and Calgary at Winnipeg tonight. That's one to absolutely keep your eye on. If that will get that percentage up a little bit. According to Sports Club stats, the win last night and the Calgary loss, it got Nashville from 3.2% to 5.6%. So we're moving up.
moving on up.
But in all seriousness, it changes a lot. You keep winning, that number will keep rising. I'm telling you. I want to ask you one more, Mace, before we let you go real quick. The Novakian, right? The Tommy Novak thing. I find myself every night going, all right, prove it to me again, Novak. Prove it to me again. This is unbelievable. You go back to the beginning of training camp. Nobody was talking about Tommy Novak making the team. It was like, Novak will be in Milwaukee. There he is. He's skating around. Didn't make the last cut to even get to the Global Series where you could take extra players on the roster. Then he just goes down in Milwaukee, starts scoring. He's leading the team in points. He comes up in December. The NHL didn't stop the presses and say, hey, they're bringing up Tommy Novak. Watch out. They're bringing him up. Nobody was like, oh, okay, Novak's coming up. Okay, all right. He'll help, fourth line, whatever. And here he is. So I'm still, Mace, amazed every night because he just keeps doing it. Keeps doing it. I wonder, David Poile and Barry Trotz, when they're watching, they have to be having kind of that same thing. Good grief, he just did it again.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's one of the best stories of the season. And I think I started calling him the Novakian nightmare because he's terrorizing everybody that he plays against. If he falls asleep for a second, he's going to get you, I'll tell you. But it's unreal because I just was crunching the numbers today, actually, because we were following this a couple games ago. He is leading the team in points per game. He has more points per game than Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, Matt Duchene, go all the way down the list. Than anybody, and he's played a big enough sample size. I think it's 47 games now. It's not like it's 10 games or like, oh, I had a couple of big games in there. This is 47 games. Now, this, he signed for one more year. They re-signed him for 1 year next year. I bet they're wishing they did the old long get him low for multiple years. But he's been phenomenal, and he does. He keeps getting better, and he looks confident. He looks, you know, certain parts of his game when he first started playing, I didn't think that he had. Did he have that physicality? Did he look like he could go out there and, you know, be intense against the, you know, a top line, or was he going to be a shooter? He was always a pass first type of a player, but his game has just grown so much, and he's becoming this, you know, top two centerman, not power forward, but he'll get in there and he'll shoot the puck, and it's been unbelievable what he's been able to do. He can run a power play on the half wall. He's got a head up, and I'm the same as you, Willie. I mean, I remember when he started having success, we asked Hines about it, and he's like, hey, well, can he keep doing it? Can he get better in the faceoff circle? How long can he be consistent for? And I think you've seen a big enough sample size. It's going to be tough next year because he's not going to sneak up on anybody. So there could be some regression in his, you know, point per game total, but I think he's the real deal, and it's what a ride. And you don't get to see this. Had you not had the injuries, had you not traded away all those guys, you probably don't have Tommy Novak in that role having the success that he is. So a lot of blessings, I guess, in disguise for this season.
Chris Mason, thank you for your time. Always appreciate the conversation. We'll chat with you soon.
Okay, thank you, guys. Take care.
Awesome. Thank you, C-Mace. Hey, the Preds have a game tomorrow night, and it is your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty and Superbook Sports. So if you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game tomorrow night, you will win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate in Pick to Click tomorrow morning at 8:45 a.m. with Robbie and Rex Road. And speaking of tickets, let's give away a little bit more. Be caller 3 right now before you can even buy them to see Kiss at Bridgestone Arena on October 23rd. Good luck with that. It's Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Because you've got to ask yourself, would the Titans be better in the medium to long term? I mean, short term, they're building. They're not going to probably go to the Super Bowl next year anyway, absent alien abduction of some of their better opponents. They just take them, you know, in a spaceship off into space, and the Titans win by forfeit. Other than that, they're not going to the Super Bowl this year, maybe not the next. And so for medium to long term, are the Titans better off with Anthony Richardson and hope he pans out the way they think he could, but those other support players not there? Or would they be better saying, okay, a guy like Hendon Hooker, who I like for a lot of reasons, and I think his negatives don't bother me at all, and if he were taken at 11, it wouldn't really bother me. But Hooker, with all those support people that they would have to trade away in the form of draft picks, which would be better, Richardson by himself or Hooker surrounded by those guys when you look at 3 years down the road and then for the next seven? And I think Hooker, with those players around him, has a better chance of leading this team to the Super Bowl than Richardson by himself without those extra guys.
There you go. That was Trevor Maddich on Stillman & Company yesterday. He says you have a better chance of winning a Super Bowl with Hendon Hooker, with all of the picks that you would keep by not trading up to get Anthony Richardson. A better chance of winning a Super Bowl with Hendon Hooker and role players than you are trading up, selling the farm for Anthony Richardson. I think I might just mess around and be convinced that I want the Titans to take Hendon Hooker at number 11. I'm calling it now. I think that's what I want.
What did you just put in your coffee or something?
You went and got something to drink.
Some juju. A little something. Chase, I'm kidding.
11.
I think I could be convinced.
At 11.
At 11.
For the Tennessee Titans, I think the only way I can't see them drafting Hendon Hooker at 11. I can see them potentially moving up to 3 if indeed they truly believe that one of these three quarterbacks, and everybody's on board with all three of them, one of these three quarterbacks can be their quarterback of the future and lead them to a Super Bowl. I think that's the reason why that's the reason they move up. And obviously they would have to give up draft capital for it. But I like the fact, I like what Maddich said about Hendon Hooker, but not at 11. For this reason, I think if you're sitting at 11 and you're looking at the teams behind you, you're thinking, those teams really don't need a quarterback. They're not moving to get a quarterback, but they want to move up in the draft to get particular – to get maybe one of the defensive guys, or maybe the tackle, you know, Paris Johnson. Mm-hmm. I can see the Titans strategically moving down in the draft, potentially accumulating picks until they get to a point where in the first round they say, all right, we're done moving. We can get Hendon Hooker now. Because now what they've done, if they've systematically and deliberately moved down to spots where they know the teams that are ahead of them are not going to draft a quarterback. So if we move down a little bit further and accumulate maybe a fourth round pick, which we don't have, or maybe another fifth round pick, we move down. Now we get a Hendon Hooker. Now we start to build the roster around all of that, because now we still got our first round draft pick. It may be a little bit lower, but we still got our first. We still got our second. We got a third. May have picked up a fourth or another fifth. Now we can continue to build around Hendon Hooker, who we believe, in their mind, they may think he's the third best quarterback in the draft. And if we get him, Aaron Rodgers, a la Aaron Rodgers, we get him at the bottom of the first round, and he sits for a year. We build our team, accumulate picks in this year's draft. Now, what Maddich said is, it's right, but not at 11. We get him at 23 or 24.
But how do you know?
But that's why it has to be strategic. You have to really think about it when you're moving down. You got to think, well, is this team primed to move up? Does this team need a quarterback? You know, is Will Levis still on the board? That helps you if Will Levis is still on the board. That helps you because now it's two quarterbacks. You don't want Will Levis. You want Hendon Hooker. But nobody knows that.
Because if the Titans decide to trade back, I view that as they're probably looking at an offensive lineman, wide receiver, another one of these really deep position groups where they like three or four different players. And they're like, look, if we don't get a Zay Flowers or a Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Jordan Addison is on the board at 25, cool, we'll take Jordan Addison for some of these deep position groups. But if the Titans look at Hendon Hooker, like that's the quarterback that's going to get us to a Super Bowl. Got to take him at 11, right? It might feel very rich. It might feel like you might be reaching for it, but it's a quarterback. And I'll say the same thing about taking Hendon Hooker potentially at 11 as I would for the Titans maybe trading up for Anthony Richardson.
What if you took him at 13, 14, 15, get another pick in the draft?
You need a trade partner.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If someone wants to move up to your spot, and they say they are at 15. I don't know who have the 15th pick in this year's draft.
15 is Green Bay.
Green Bay. Say they want to move up in the draft to potentially get their tackle, Paris Johnson or one of these other tackles. Then you make the move with Green Bay. Looking at the draft, knowing that potentially no one in front of them or in those next four spots wants a quarterback.
But how do you know?
That's it's a roll of a dice.
New England picks up 14.
Yeah.
It was reported that Bill Belichick was shopping Mac Jones. So how do we know that the Patriots,
they may love Will Levis and he's still on the board.
Crazy thought. Let's just throw the weirdest thing in the world at the wall. Let's say, I'll do it next. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
What do you think is his destiny in the NFL? And what have you heard from coaches on, because the offense he plays with Tennessee is unique and it doesn't always translate well into the NFL. Do you believe that he will be a first round guy and that his level of play will be able to translate into the NFL, Bruce?
I do on both of those things. And for me, the buzz really started to grow. I was in an Indy at the combine about a month ago and had lunch with an NFL quarterback coach I know, and I said, who impressed you the most in your meetings? And he said Hendon Hooker did. He was like, they loved his demeanor. They also really loved not just, his knowledge of what they were trying to do at Tennessee, but in depth of what he could break down, how they did what they did at Virginia Tech and the rationale behind that, his first offense. And now in a time when the league is getting used to seeing guys who have, had multiple schools because of the transfer portal, I think that impressed them. Then when I started talking to all these coaches who faced them, and again, like, these guys have a sample size in terms of, there's three, if not four, because some guys have certainly seen a lot of Bryce Young, out of the SEC. You got Will Levis, you got Anthony Richardson, you got Hendon Hooker. Some of the people I talked to thought Hendon Hooker should go ahead of Will Levis. They liked him that much.
There you go. That was Bruce Feldman on Chase and Michelle today. And after listening to Bruce Feldman and Trevor Maddich yesterday on Stillman & Company, I'm getting more and more convinced that I would love Hendon Hooker with the Titans. And taking him at 11 might seem a little bit rich, since he is a guy whose stock is climbing, but it's climbing into the mid to late 20s in a lot of more recent mock drafts. So D-Mace and Will, you all make very fair points. If you want Hendon Hooker, you could probably trade back, pick up more picks to build for the future and get him later in the draft. But let me entertain a wild scenario for you, because I'm thinking if the Titans view Hendon Hooker as that is our quarterback who's going to bring us to the promised land, you got to take him at 11. But let's say they're thinking, okay, let's trade back. Let's pick up more picks because we don't know, or we don't think that any other team taking below us or in between 11 and wherever the Titans may trade down to are going to take a quarterback. Let's say, so Houston takes at 12, Jets at 13, New England 14, Green Bay 15. Let's say the deal between Aaron Rodgers and the Jets falls through. Let's say the Patriots trade the Patriots trade Mac Jones to the Jets.
Whoa.
Stay with me, because it's been reported that Bill Belichick was shopping Mac Jones, and I don't know how serious that is. But we've seen some of the friction between Mac Jones and Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots organization.
There's a history there.
So Aaron Rodgers stays in Green Bay. The Patriots go with Bailey Zappe. And then the Patriots trade Mac Jones to the Jets. What if the Patriots draft Hendon Hooker to be their quarterback of the future? To sit behind Bailey Zappi for a year, they love Hendon Hooker, they take Hendon Hooker. It's a crazy and wild scenario, I know, and it probably would never happen in a million years, but anything can happen in the NFL draft. Anything can happen in the NFL. So if the Titans are looking at Hendon Hooker like, that is our guy, we have to have him, you never know what other teams in the league are thinking. You never know what other players in the draft, other teams like in this year's draft. So if you love him, I think you have to take him at 11. Is it reaching a little bit? Maybe. Yeah, probably. But I think taking Will Levis at number 3 is reaching as well, and that's a legitimate possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I was just looking at another draft, pre-draft. Bucky Brooks had his pre-draft, mock draft. And it's surprising. And that's why, you know, it's – I know there are plenty – of mock drafts. Hell, DJ may have a, Mahoney might have a mock draft. I don't know. DJ may have a mock draft. Who knows? I mean, people you know, Caroline, may have a mock draft.
I don't know about that.
And they may have people drafted that ain't going to get drafted in the first round. I don't know. But when you
do know somebody who wanted the Titans to trade up to number 3 to take Jalin Hyatt. That okay. person is a Tennessee alum.
Exactly. Really? Absolutely.
If you don't say. Tell, if you couldn't tell.
But when you look at all these mock drafts, they are so different, you know, from who's going to get drafted first, how many quarterbacks are taken in the first round. I'm looking at Bucky Brooks' mock draft, and he doesn't even have Will Levis in the first round. He has Anthony Richardson being drafted in the 20. I think somewhere around 20, 21. I think it's 20. So all of these draft mock drafts are totally different. I think once you get closer and closer to the draft, I think you will start seeing truly where these individuals may end up going. So a guy like Hendon Hooker, he's rising in the draft, not necessarily because of what he's done, you know, in the postseason, I mean, in the offseason, because he hadn't been able to do anything. But I think what is happening now is to his benefit. He knew he wasn't going, I mean, everybody knew he wasn't going to be in front of Shroud or Bryce Young. Those two guys are just clear cut. They are the best quarterbacks. But the less he did and the more those others did, Will Levis, Anthony Richardson, it slowly caused him to rise in the draft. More importantly, what Will Levis isn't doing. Like, he's not – it went from he could potentially be the number one pick, if you're talking about Mel Kiper, to now he's falling down the draft board slowly. And Hendon Hooker is rising slowly. Why? Because we're all intrigued, just like we're intrigued about Anthony Richardson. We are intrigued about Hendon Hooker. Why? Because he hasn't done anything in offseason. And we're trying to figure out, like, is this guy really that good? What if he would have finished the season not injured? Where would he have been? So it's not like we can look at Hendon Hooker and he's went through the combine and he's done all these. Then we can kind of get a good picture of where we potentially think he could go. But right now we don't know. And he's rising because of what those guys other than Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud are doing or not doing. And that's helping him.
I think you want to, philosophically, you want to take advantage of teams that, quote unquote, get desperate or fall in love with a guy. You want to have that work to your advantage. Take advantage of those teams. Get an extra draft pick from those teams. Mm-hmm. I've seen teams move up one spot. I think the Titans did it 1 year. I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, who was the great tight end? Shockley? Who was the tight end out of Miami?
Oh, my goodness. What was the kid's name? It was Shockley. Was it Shockley?
It was several years ago.
Miami, yeah. University of Miami, several years ago.
And he had the fatigues on.
Yeah, yeah.
And he went to Cleveland. He ended up playing for Cleveland.
But if I remember correctly, Floyd Reese and the team that took Shockley, I think it was the Giants. I think if it's Shockley, they've flipped one spot.
Uh-huh.
And somebody gave up a draft pick to move up one spot to make sure that they got the guy. I just, this is, my mind is fuzzy on this. The years are starting to run together. But a lot of people were like, well, why would you do that? But if you can find a way to get an extra pick here, an extra pick there, to me, that's smart working. Because you know, at the end of the day, you're not going to bat 1,000 with all your picks. You can love all your picks, but they're not all going to pan out. You want 3 or 4 out of every draft to work out for you. That'd be a good overall batting average. So with the quarterback especially, to me, if the guy falls to you,
Jeremy Shockley. Jeremy Shockey.
Shockey. I'm thinking of DJ Shockley from Georgia. Remember him? That was another
quarterback
guy.
Of Georgia.
Yeah, but Jeremy Shockey. Look at the draft. See if you can find that trade, the draft day trade involving him. I think it was the Titans. What year was it that he was drafted?
Shockey.
Yeah.
He was drafted 14th overall in 2002.
2002. Now, who did the Titans take that year? So let's see. 2002 draft. I'll piece this together. Hopefully not. But my point is, you want to be the team that's not desperate, especially when you have a lot of holes to fill, and not the team that is giving up everything.
Haynesworth.
That's what I thought. So let's see. There was a trade. Shockey and Haynesworth, they flopped. I think the Titans wanted Haynesworth all along, but they flip-flop spots. The Giants, I think, wanted to move up. Let me see if I've got this right. Let's maybe do it during the break, and we'll get all the details.
And to your point, Willie, if you can comfortably trade back, especially let's say if the Titans are with their board, the way that the draft falls, they see that a lot of their guys in positions of need or not, just guys that they like, if there's plenty of them on the board, trade back, pick up more picks. But if you can comfortably trade back and even just pick up one late round pick, you never know what that late round pick could turn into. Like, I think it would be smart for Indianapolis to trade up just one spot to number 3. And I think it'd be smart for Arizona to trade back just one spot to number 4. Because that way, Indianapolis can secure that number 3 spot with no threat of some quarterback needy team coming in at number 3. And Arizona still has pick of the litter of whatever position or whatever player or position they want, because they know that Indianapolis is going to take it number 3. So even just one spot can be massive. It can be huge. So Arizona can get a position of need and a great player at a position of need and pick up another player and another pick later on in the draft.
So I'm looking at, of all people, Buster Olney wrote this article, 2002. The Giants wanted Shockey so bad, they moved up one spot and gave up a 4th-round pick to the Titans.
If it's worth
one spot.
Hey, if you can do that, then do it.
The Titans, I don't think, I mean, they had Frank Wycheck and all they had some good tight. I don't know that they had any interest at the end of the day of Shockey. They got their guy in Haynesworth.
They had Aaron Kinney.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just can't wait. You just need to get your guy.
Yeah, you got
to
get your guy.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue the conversation on the other side and, of course, your thoughts as well. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, and don't miss Nashville's best NFL draft coverage. It's finally here on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game, presented by Parman Energy and Parman Tractor and Equipment. Join us on location as we broadcast live from Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, home of the 29-degree beer, on Thursday, April 27th. 1025 1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports, and tune in for the Nashville Sounds Baseball tomorrow at 5:50 p.m. for a doubleheader on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Memphis Redbirds, the AAA affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals, who are getting that butt whooped right now. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Talking about the Titans potentially taking Hendon Hooker at number 11, or even taking Hendon Hooker at any point in the first round. All the talk about Hendon Hooker is getting me excited about Hendon Hooker potentially being a Tennessee Titan. Now, it's been released that Hendon Hooker will meet with the Titans at the end of this week, but there are very fair concerns about Hendon Hooker. One being the ACL. you know, that's dropped his draft stock. Mm-hmm. And ACL doesn't necessarily, you know, make me shake in my boots, especially considering Ryan Tannehill is likely your starter this year and Hendon Hooker can sit and heal and learn the offense. The second being his age, fair concerns. And the third thing that's always kind of been in the back of my mind about Hendon Hooker is he that good? Or was it Josh Heupel's system? I say the same thing about Cedric Tillman and Jalin Hyatt and really any offensive skill players at Tennessee. Was he that good? Or is the system set up for you not to fail? And Mel Kiper talked about that. He sat down with ESPN. He sat down with ESPN and said, what bothers me about Hendon Hooker is that Joe Milton came in when Hooker was hurt. He lit up the Clemson Tigers. So that Josh Heupel quarterback-friendly offense made it possible for these numbers to be through the roof. I think it's a fair concern that I have about, is it Hendon Hooker or is it Josh Heupel's offense? But looking at what Joe Milton did against Clemson in the Orange Bowl, I don't think is a fair knock on Hendon Hooker. Because we saw Joe Milton in that Heupel offense at the beginning of the 2021 season. And there was a reason why Joe Milton was no longer the starter in the middle of the season. Because Joe Milton didn't look very good. Mm-hmm. Because Joe Milton didn't play very well. Because Joe Milton couldn't complete a pass in every single throw that he threw. Went out the back of the end zone no matter where he was. He was throwing every single pass.
If you were sitting in the front row of the stands on the back side of the end zone, you had a shot. At getting one.
Absolutely.
You had a shot.
If you were in Nashville and he was playing in Knoxville, you probably had a pretty good shot of catching a Joe Milton pass.
Well, I would tell Mel Kiper, I would say, Mel, one, I'm not listening to you because you had Will Levis as the number one pick at one point. So I'm really not listening to you. But then two, just look at the accuracy. Look at the completion percentage, because he dealt with the same offense, same players that Hendon Hooker dealt with for 2 years. So it's not like Hendon Hooker had all of these great players and then Milton got in. He didn't. No, they had essentially the same team. Hendon Hooker completed almost 70% of his passes for a career. Hendon Hooker is completing over 60% of his passes. And that goes back to Virginia Tech. He's completing over 60% of his passes, and he's not turning the ball over. Milton is completing, when he was the starter, complete starter, completed 50% of his passes. The year prior to that, he completed 56% of his passes.
Whoa.
Now, last year when he got an opportunity to play, he threw the ball 82 times. He completed 64% of his passes. That tells me that this offense runs, it's more efficient when Hendon Hooker runs it rather than Milton, at least over the last couple of years. Now, Milton might get a lot better come next season, and he might be up in the 60s. But for the last couple of years, when they both had the same personnel, Hendon Hooker has been the clear-cut starter. He has been the clear-cut best player.
So let's add a little intelligence from behind the scenes with The Athletic. We've referred to Bruce Feldman's stuff today.
Yeah.
So here's a little bit. What he calls it, you look at his mock draft. This is why I think The Athletic is absolutely worth the subscription. They have some great in-depth stuff.
Every penny. Wink, mm-hmm. wink, nudge, nudge, yes. Joe Rexman.
Yeah. So, the coaching intel. These are the unnamed guys who scouted, game planned, coached against the player that they're talking about. So, for Hendon Hooker, who Feldman has going to the Vikings at pick number 23. That's where Feldman has. The coaching intel, against these are unnamed guys, but it's a mix of different people. It's not just one guy. He was much better live and on tape than I thought he was going to be. At first, and you kind of are thinking, who is this? Is this somebody from LSU staff? Is this somebody from Georgia staff? Is it Alabama?
Clearly, LSU looked surprised by him.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, it makes the wheels turn, right?
This is Brian Kelly.
Could be anybody, but especially in SEC country, you're thinking, is this an SEC guy? Much better live than I thought he was going to be. At first, it was like, this guy's all right. But then you kept watching. Oh, my God. This guy has grown leaps and bounds in a year. He's got a cannon. when you look at Tennessee's system, it's clear that it's a half-field read where a lot of times half of the receivers aren't running routes. I think he will have a learning curve making the leap. This is person number two. I think he's underrated. He played in two significantly different offenses. I was super impressed with him in our game and on tape. I know in that offense he's throwing into space, reading the leverage of the defender, where they spread you out so much more horizontally in one-on-one situations. So he's probably only saw quarters coverage. And, man, you can interpret this, D-Mace. He's not reading. Are they rolling strong, rolling weak, cover two? But he would sit in the pocket and hang tough. He can make all the throws. He's got touch. He might not run straight lines fast as Levis, but I think he's able to escape and create better, has much more pocket presence. Final guy, big Hendon fan. He was the smartest of the three quarterbacks we saw, Richardson, Levis, and Hooker. I like his decision-making. He has a really quick release. The system fit him. I thought he was a Donovan McNabb type. Obviously, the ACL, I think he's underrated. I think Hendon's arm might be better than Levis. So that's the intel they got from behind the scenes. Again, but what, that's in the Athletic.
But what that tells me is this. He has what is hard to teach. The accuracy, the touch.
Intelligence.
It's hard to teach those things, even though guys do get better as their career goes on typically. But it's hard to teach those things like right away. You don't have to teach that with him. He has the touch. He has the accuracy. He knows how to read. He can find that open space. Now, the learning curve for him, which is why he needs to sit a year, is to now be able to read defenses, like not just half the field defenses. I'm talking about the whole field. So that year of sitting down, watching, allows him to do that. He already has the accuracy. He already has the acumen, the intelligence to play this position. Now we just got to get him from reading one half of the field to the whole field. And it seems like from what these evaluators are saying or coaches are saying, he's able to do. Why? Because he went from one system to another and was able to pick it up and thrive.
In an offense that's not very easy to pick up.
Exactly.
That's something that Hendon Hooker even said. He was like, I think that I struggled so much with picking up this offense and being able to execute it so quickly. That's ultimately why Joe Milton got the starting job in 2021. It's not an easy offense to become an expert on, but he was able to do it. And exactly. He was able to execute at such a high level. So I hear Mel Kiper in the concerns about the system. Is Hendon Hooker simply just a product of Josh Heupel's offense? Or was the marriage between Josh Heupel's offense and Hendon Hooker just the perfect storm for Tennessee that all came together? And it's with all of the intangibles, like you said, D-Mace, the intelligence, the accuracy, just the ability to be so calm, cool, and collected in the pocket, those are things you don't find just anywhere. That is going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love on somebody, and peace!